in my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts. Be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen.
Amen. Amen.
Headline in the world of religious news services, where stories of religious interests are brought together. The headline varied a bit from place to place, but it went something like this. Newsflash. You can be good without God. For the first time, the story continued, for the first time, a majority of Americans, 56%, say that it is possible to be a good person without religious belief. The evidence for this comes from a couple of polls that were taken this past summer by the Pew Research Institute. Part of the news is that in 2011, that number was lower. It was less than half. A similar survey in 2011 found that 49% of Americans felt that it was possible to be good without having a belief in God. That number has increased over the past 6 years. And as the story said, for the first time, a majority, 56%, say that it is possible to be a good person without religious belief. The actual question that they asked was this one. Which of these would you say is true? It is necessary or not necessary to believe in God in order to be moral and have good values? Now, I imagine that there are a number of different ways that people would respond to this news story. This story that certainly did not make the secular press, but how they might react to this story that there has been an increase in the number of Americans who believe that it is possible to be good without religious belief. Most of the comments that I read, which were from what I would call probably primarily thoughtful Episcopalians, sort of said, duh. That's a thoughtful response. It's possible to be good without belief, without affirming belief in God. One writer said, it's obviously true and easily observable. I suspect that most of us, perhaps all of us, have known people who do not profess a Christian faith or even a faith in God who are nonetheless very moral and good people. The story interested the pollsters and the religious pundits and the headline writers because of that decrease or increase, depending upon how you look at it. Decrease in the number of people who do feel that it is necessary to have a belief in God in order to be a good or moral person. That number has declined. According to the poll, some of that decline is attributed to the increase in percentage in American society of what are called the nones, people who do not claim any particular religious identity, and who therefore, not surprisingly, do not see the necessity of God as a part of their life, whether they seek to live moral lives or not. But the interesting point, for some folks at least, was that another chunk of the decrease in the number of people who feel that religious belief is necessary to be a moral person. A significant chunk of that decrease came amongst folks who identify as evangelical Christian. That would have been the core group that felt it was necessary in the past, and there has been a measurable decrease. There are a whole lot of rabbit holes we could go down related to this particular survey, and that is not my intent. My intent is to just sort of get you thinking about a life of faith, a religious journey, and a good or moral life in the world. A long introduction leading me to a look at today's gospel passage. We are, of course, continuing our way through Matthew, getting closer and closer to the climax of Matthew, Jesus' crucifixion and then resurrection. This particular story that we heard today is the last of what are sometimes called the disputation narratives, when the Pharisees and the Sadducees come trying to trip up and discredit Jesus, trying to erode his following by the means of debate or trapping him in a difficult question. They don't succeed in these disputations. Ultimately, of course, they do succeed in other ways. The Pharisees' question, we might recast it a little bit. The Pharisees' question to Jesus is really this. They say, according to the law of Moses, the Ten Commandments, according to the law of Moses, those laws that we look to govern our life as God's people, according to the law of Moses, what is the most important thing that is necessary to live as a moral person? What's the most important thing? It is a trick question. What is the most important thing to live as good people or as faithful people? Jesus responds with a summary and an interpretation of the Ten Commandments. This is what the law of Moses is really about, Jesus says. The first five are about loving God, and the second five are about loving your neighbor. This is what you need to know, Jesus says. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and mind. And you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Jesus' response as to how to live as faithful people under the law of Moses. So I'm back. I'm back thinking a little bit about this survey. As you're probably aware, amongst that group of people who think that belief in God is necessary to be a moral person, there is certainly a segment of that group that interpret that in terms of a very narrow, judgmental, often hurtful moral code. And it's tempting, at least for me, to kind of pile on in opposition to that conservative evangelical position. And to not go any further. To express my disagreement with that particular approach that takes religious belief as the justification for a very narrow and prescribed code of behavior. And yet, if I or we stop at that point, we've missed Jesus' message. Because they actually get one thing right. In my opinion, at least, the logic is distorted. But one piece of what they bring to the conversation is important. I would say, it's clear to me, at least, that belief in God is not necessary to be a good person. It is possible to be a good person without affirming an explicit belief. But if you believe in God, it is necessary to be a good person. It's a significant difference. Believing God is not necessary to be good, but if you believe in God, or even if you are just seeking that way, part of that endeavor is that we, with God's help, as best we can, with God's help, as best we can, seek to be good people. It's not necessary to believe in God to be a good person, but if you believe in God, whether you describe that belief is as a committed Christian or as someone seeking some transcendent goodness, wherever you place yourself on that spectrum, that connection has implications for how we live. That's the important point. There is necessarily an active component to the spiritual life, the faithful life. There is necessarily a component that challenges us to live good lives in the world as a part of our spiritual, faithful life. You don't have to believe in God to be a good person, but if you believe in God, you have to try to be a good person. And Jesus tells us how to do that. This is the culmination of his teaching in Matthew. This reflects back to some things he said at the very beginning of his ministry in Matthew, and it sums it up and presents it to us. Love. Love God and love neighbor. That's how to be a good person. Love God and love neighbor. And as I talked about some weeks ago, this sort of love, this is agape love. And the kind of love that Jesus is talking about is not a feeling of affection or kindness, as blessed as those are. This kind of love is a matter of will, of action, and of commitment. So when Jesus says to love God, there's a question of commitment and of acting and of choice. It is choosing to act in a way that pleases God. Come before God in worship and praise. Acknowledge and give thanks to God for those blessings that God offers into our lives. Act upon that presence of God's love in your life in ways that give thanks and reflect it back. And to love your neighbor as yourself means being proactive throughout our lives to do things that will benefit our neighbor. And another sort of little interesting note, at least interesting to me, that word neighbor, it doesn't mean in the Greek the person next to you. It doesn't mean your compatriots. It means the person you are going to meet. It has a sense of encounter. So Jesus is encouraging us to love all those whom we encounter and will encounter in our lives. In all of the diverse ways in which we meet people, directly and indirectly. To love your neighbor is to choose to act in ways that will benefit those whom we encounter. It is a choice, hopefully a choice that we undertake gratefully, not as an onerous command, but out of a sense of gratitude for what we have been given, out of the joy of sharing and making real God's love in the lives of others as we have known it in ours, to give voice to that love and to make it real in others' lives actively. I was asked to preach a stewardship sermon this morning. It would have been the same sermon regardless. I figure probably 60 or 70% of my sermons are stewardship sermons. I just don't call them that. But I would remind you that this parish is a wonderful, remarkable, and miraculous way in which to act in love. It is a way in which we can act to show our love for God as we give voice in song, as we offer prayer, as we come together in fellowship. And it is a way in which we too can support one another and have the means to make God's love known elsewhere. We all have an opportunity to offer ourselves into that endeavor, to be active. Active in voice and in action, bringing whatever resources we have to the ways in which this particular parish shows forth the love of God and the love of neighbor. Amen.
Amen.